This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 20th of November, 1952. The title of this lecture is Creative Processing, Breaking PC's Agreement with Natural Laws. This lecture is 67 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Now in this 20th November, second half of the night lecture, the process which I'm going to lay out here is creative processing, and I have just given you the essentials back of it, and there are other tapes on this and the various essentials which will permit this process to fall together for you with great ease. It is in essence a method of permitting the individual to sidestep and on a gradient scale of disagreements break his postulates so that he becomes more free in use of postulates. He is on a chain of agreement, and we have tracked that chain of agreement very, very carefully, and this chain of agreement is found in, for instance, Homo sapiens has agreed to act, more or less, not agreed to think, you understand, that's the logics, that's outside that sphere. He's agreed to act, he never did agree to think, he never did figure out how he thought, along a certain chain, and most of those are in the axioms themselves. Now, that is a pattern of the agreement called the messed universe. Now, we had to know about facsimiles and flows and dispersals and ridges and ARC and its characteristics and all that sort of thing to have an idea of what kind of a tiger this was we were shooting. We found out where he lived and how many footprints he made and how high we had to get up in a tree to shoot him and so forth, because this tiger kept carrying us away. All right. Now, having found the tiger, we find out that it is a chain of agreement which makes up this reality. This demonstrates itself most adequately in the processing itself, and we find out that in processing, the use of creative processing is very superior to any other brand of processing. Any other brand of processing, less one. And it slides back to then just postulates, change of postulate. But how do you get a fellow into a state where he is able to change postulates? Well, you get him out of his body. That's the best method. You get him out of his body and get him to mock up and destroy and so forth, and he's very securely out, he knows he's out, and you'll find him able to go ahead and change his postulates. Well, you wouldn't even know how to, really, at first glance, what one should change his postulates to unless you had some sort of a goal. And the goal is to get one's postulates into such a state as they are completely flexible. You'll find out one will have a goal concerning this sort of thing before he's gone very long on this. But you want to develop his force and his lot of other things. You're not really terribly interested in developing his perception, except insofar as development of perception will enhance his control of energy. Because if he eventually comes to a point where he controls energy, he'll begin to have a contempt for it. Because the very funny part of it is you can accomplish about 8,000 times as much without using energy. Because you can unpostulate out of existence space. And you can postulate space into existence, and you can postulate space warps and all sorts of interesting things. The first class had a little bit of fun. They wondered, what are the upper capabilities of a thetan? You see, there's the theta clear. He's just stable outside of his body. That's all. He just doesn't have to come into a body every time the body gets hurt. Well, that's a terrific advance, by the way, because that's how he got into a horrible condition. But where does he go from there? Well, he should be able to handle horse. But get himself up to a point where he doesn't have to handle it. Now, the way out is the way through. A person just doesn't negate against and abandon his body and fight back from his body, fight away from his body in order to get out of his body. No, he kind of locks himself in every time he tries to do that. He doesn't try to abandon the third and fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh and eighth dynamics in order to get away from them. No, that's the road down. Abandonment, fighting back, discard, and so on. You want to get up to such mighty stature in all of these things, you get up to a stature where you can handle all these things. You can handle all these things, then you can ignore them. If you can't handle them, you are can consider they're dangerous. So if you consider they're dangerous, you can't handle them. You see? So the road out is the conquest of the dynamics. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And you wind yourself up as out, not abandon one, abandon two. You find most preachers will start arguing with you and say, oh, well, all right, I'll step out. Body wasn't much use anyway. I guess so. I guess it wasn't any very much use. I never did like it very much. And I'll give it up. Of course, I don't quite know what'll happen to it, but I'll give it up. I'll abandon. Oh, no. Wrong route. Wrong route entirely. He's indoctrinating himself to negate. No. If you've ever seen anybody play around with an erecto set, like, the little bolts and bars, and they build bridges and things like that. Well, after a kid has convinced himself that he can build a bridge, something of the sort, he doesn't take the bridge apart. Not because he wants to hold on to the bridge so much, but he has mastered the set. His interest does not much continue beyond a complete mastery of something. So actually, a complete mastery of this universe would be intensely desirable. Fortunately, that's not necessary. Just to free a fellow from his body, you only have to clear him on the first dynamic. Think of that. But in order to do this, all you have to do is upset this chain of agreement. Now, he has agreed and agreed and agreed that he is a body. A lot of pre-clears, a good percentage of them. I don't know what the percentage is. Might be as many as 50%. You tell a fellow be 2 feet in back of your head. He is. Hey, what am I doing here? What was I doing in that thing? And you say, shift a few postulates and go around here and do that and so on, and he starts figuring him out. Now, if you shifted him back there and he stepped out, and then you said, now agree with the physical universe. Now, let's see if we can see this, see that. Now, let's sure get the space right, get this right. Now, make sure you're in agreement with the physical universe. Now, make sure you're in agreement with it. Well, you didn't go down to apathy and get back inside. He said he wouldn't be able to get out again. Not until you gave him a lot more processing. So the thing to do is to disagree with the physical universe. Well, how do you disagree with the physical universe? By fighting it? No, but by just going to work and build your own universe. Now, the gradient scale of the process could start, perhaps, eyes shut, envisioning the immediate surrounding, and then with eyes shut, but knowing what the immediate surrounding looked like, make the tiniest portion, the lightest and smallest portion of that surrounding, disobey a primary law of the physical universe. Well, one of these would be the law of gravity. That always comes up because that's one of the things that hold people down here to Earth. They think that they'll fall. They think they can't get up. They can't walk up. They think they have to be supported by this and that and so on. So you make them disobey the law of gravity with their eyes shut. But how do they disobey the law of gravity? Well, this matchbox is not very heavy. So you say, all right, I see that matchbox. And we're not asking them to mock up anything. See, we're not asking them to do anything that's any big strain. I'm giving you now the lowest end of the gradient scale that I know of. You don't have to do this with all cases. I'm just starting it in from scratch. If you get a 5, for instance, you have to start him in from scratch in the body. Sometimes you get a thetan outside, and you have to start him in from scratch. But you can't start him in from scratch because his postulates throw him so haywire that he scrambles space. So you just assist him in doing what he's doing. You just scramble space more for him. until he can really get space scrambled. And when he really gets space scrambled, he'll suddenly realize it's not very important, the fact that he's scrambling space, and he'll unscramble space. And then he'll scramble it and unscramble it, and then he'll mark up some space and say the devil with it. Space is easy to handle. If you can handle space, you can do this, and a little energy, and so on. He'll go on up the line from that. But don't keep bringing him in, trying to make him agree with the physical universe. So, all right, first step, if it's a 5 or a 1 or whatever you have, this is the lowest end of the grading scale. You take this matchbox, very specific process. Tell him, take a look at it. Now close these eyes, and I'll make it rise up in the air. Bob finally says, yeah, I can do that. Make it rise up in the air. And you say, all right, now let it settle back again. Now make it rise up in the air a little bit further. Now let it settle back. Now make it rise up in the air a little bit further. Now make it just slam itself against the ceiling. Now, did you have a wire on it? Well, yes, I was doing all of that with a wire and so on. But you say, well, all right, now... You can suspect that he has used natural supports and mechanics in order to make this thing come about. You can just suppose that, just automatically offhand. You tell him, close your eye, take that matchbox. I have the matchbox without any support or assistance suddenly rise an inch in the air. There, you can get that. See, that's good. That's good. Now open your eyes. Now look at it, and with your eyes open, have the matchbox rise an inch in the air. In cases liable to have trouble with this, he's going to suddenly tell you there are 2 matchboxes. And of course, this is in direct obedience, his saying that. He's saying that directly out of obedience to the law of conservation of energy. He's going to say, why, naturally, we have to have scarcity in this universe. And if I have a matchbox here and I say a matchbox is there, there's only one matchbox, the conservation of energy. And you say, well, all right, that's fine. You have 2 matchboxes. All right, take this first matchbox and break it up. With your eyes open there, just take a look at it and break up that matchbox. And now... have it rise up in the air. You say, there's still 2 matchboxes. You say, that's fine. Now close your eyes, and with your eyes closed, you see that chair, some chair. Now have that chair reverse itself and sit against the ceiling. That's right, you do that. Now do it again, and again, and again. And you say, you got any wires on it? Oh, yes, I did have a wire on it. I was hoisting it up there, but there was really a magnet on the second floor, and that's what pulls there. You say, this Dickens with the second floor, had the chair go over and stick on the window pane. He can't find any magnet back in the window pane, and no way to put a wire up there. Make it do that. Now have the chair go over and stand sideways against the window pane. I'll go back and sit down in the room. Go stand against the window pane. Back into the room. All right, have it stand against the window pane. Leave it there. Now I say as an auditor, take that table. His eyes still closing. Take the table. Make it stand on the ceiling. Take whatever else is in the room and make it stand on the ceiling. You'll notice that the more pieces you put up, the more worried he gets. And he begins to feel like he's upside down or he's trying to turn the room over. Immediately, this is very interesting, see, his concept of space is what's getting upset. Oh, well, that shouldn't upset. His computations on space, you're handling objects. See, these things are very intimately related. And so you say, well, all right, now you can put all those objects down on the floor again. Now open your eyes. Now open your eyes. Now with your eyes open, have that chair turn around and go up against the ceiling. You say, but there's 2 chairs there. You say, well, all right. Put 2 chairs on the ceiling. He said, but now there are 3 chairs. And you say, well, okay, put 4 chairs on the ceiling. Yeah, he said, but there aren't 4 chairs to put on the ceiling. That's all right. You say, you put 4 chairs on the ceiling. He's got 4 chairs on the ceiling, and he still sees what he considers to be the actual chair on the floor. But he stops protesting about it, either because you've beaten him into apathy, or simply because you're giving him an upset, and he has actually conquered this little impulse to go on and agree. He's just addicted with it. And what do you know? If you keep this up, this process, first you do it with this room. Don't get so big immediately that it goes out beyond his ability to rebel. You can say to somebody, well, make the whole universe turn over. And he'll say, well, all right, I'd make the whole universe turn over. Worst case, turned over. It's all right. He knows there's no universe there. I mean, it's outside of his ability to rebel. He says it's all right to do that. It's such a wild one. No, you keep him close to home. Now you say, all right. Now you could tell him, now take a look, shut your eyes and take a look at Niagara Falls. All right. Zambezi Falls. Okay. The Falls of the Ganges. Okay. I can see falls, he'll say. And you say, all right. Now you see him running. Now watch him until... Now have the river run completely dry. Oh, that's easy. Gee, falls, thunder, all of a sudden the river runs dry and there's ledges of rock standing there. That's simple. What you've done is kill the river, you see. Stop. That's a form of stop. Only he doesn't recognize that. Yeah, let the falls go. All right, now, let's have the river full of water again. That's kind of hard to do, he says. Well, get a little trickle of water and have it come down and drip over the fall. All right. Now I have two trickles. Now four trickles, six trickles, 12 trickles. Well, I got the falls going again, he'll say. You say, okay. All right. Now have the river stop. Okay. Stopped. Or maybe he won't say it. Maybe he'll say, I can't get it stopped or something of the sort. But whatever he does, just follow it along. You're going on start, change, and stop. With the laws of the universe in this universe. Now you say, you got it stopped? Okay. Now make it flow backwards up over the top of the rim of the falls. Oh, no. You say, every time I try to take this out, I can't lift it up that much. He thinks he's got... You'll see him doing... He can't do it. He can't get all that tonnage of water. So you say, well, look, have a fireman stand down at the bottom of the falls and have him shoot a hose up over the top of the fall. Oh, yeah, I can do that. There's nothing to that. Okay, take the fireman away. Yes. I got the hose propped up with some sticks. See, agree is what he's doing. Now, all right, now take the hose away. Well, the whole thing goes away then. Well, that's all right. Take the hose away. Now have the water run from that point where the hose was up over the top of the fall. No, I can't do that. All right. Take one drop of water and have it rise out of the river below the fall and have it go up and hit the lip of the fall and go plink. Yeah. Yeah. Now take two drops of water from below the river and go up over the lip of the fall and go plink, plink. Yeah, I can do that. The first thing you know, what do you have? You have... He can busily combine the Zambezi and the Niagara and the Ganges all together and have them all run backwards up over the lip of a prehistoric fall that he saw once in the upper Gobi or something. Nothing to it. He can have water running uphill, and he can see it running uphill. Well, we got a disobedience to the laws. But if he can't do that, that's too wild for him. There's a lower gradient scale there. Have a trickle of water run in under the door. Okay, got that trickle of water in under the door. Now have it run on the rug. Got that. All right, now tip one corner of the rug up and make that trickle of water run slightly up the corner of the rug. Yeah, I can do that. The rug soaks it up. See, this terrific impulse to agree is there. Now you say, no, have it run up in liquid form. Well, you'll say it kind of surges up and goes back. You'll say, well, let it surge up a couple of times and then have it go right on up. With no force pushing it. You'll see him go, trying to pull it up, see? Pull it up. Well, you finally get to a point where you can have a few drops of water go uphill. Disobedience of gravity. Now, looking at something and seeing it some other way is something in the first few hours of processing, the first hour or two, if you do this to a five, he's just sure you're going to drive him mad. He's sure that this is the root of madness. You say, see that ash tray? And I have it stand sideways and have all of the ashes stay in it. No. Well, this is the way you go on it. Now, you just take the universe and you shake it all up. What are the various laws of the universe? Start, stop, and change. You start anything that obviously can't be started. You stop anything that obviously he knows he can't stop. You change anything which is enduring and immutable and will last forever. That's what you change. You start, stop, and change. Just keep working on that. In terms of physical laws, is best. That's what he's agreed on, mainly. Water can't run uphill. Chairs don't sit on the ceiling. Lorries don't run down the street backwards at 40 miles an hour. All right, he can get up to a point, though, where he can have whole strings of lorries running down the street backwards at 100 miles an hour with wild abandon. Sure, but it sure worries him at first. He's afraid the lorry's going to run into something. Well, every time you do this, he actually gets freer and freer and freer of this agreement. If you were going to undo the deepest hypnosis which you could possibly undo, you would undo it more or less in that fashion. You would spring it a tiny little bit at a time. You wouldn't just ask the guy to wake up and be completely alert. You could, of course. And he might. It might be that if you just said to your preclear, when I count from 5 to 1 and snap my fingers, you will come out completely out of your agreement with the mesh universe. Every so often, a case would. He'd just be in wonderful shape. He probably wouldn't be there either. You said, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Wake up. You're liable to get that sort of thing. Now, don't think for a moment your preclear won't grog on this. This actually obeys the laws of hypnotism. People are walking around in about a 9/10 hypnotized state. Most of them 99/10. They're really down the spout on hypnotism. You start make a preclear do this, he'll get awful funny. He'll get very groggy. He'll see things dance. So on. Now, the more you do this, the less things take up random motion. You understand that he's trying to tend towards zero, in far as the physical universe is concerned, zero of agreement. But he'll start to tend towards zero. You'll find there's one of the more difficult things to have him with just hold something still. You say, let's just hold it still. Particularly if it's something that ought to be moving. Let's take a horseshoe. And let's have it halt in midair, right in front of you. Now just hold it there. So feel that horseshoe trying to fall for a little while. You say, hold that horseshoe there. Well, the first one he tries to do, the horseshoe will swing back and forth and try to turn around this way and try to go up and come down and go this way and go that way. No. You just want that horseshoe right there. Completely still, with the same lighting, without any change, no change. That's real zero. It's almost impossible for a man to conceive complete motionlessness when he first starts in, but it becomes very easy for him to after a short drill on creative processing. He knows that. Well, he can't conceive theta until he can conceive motionlessness. Anybody can conceive motion. Although he may be getting still pictures, they're imminent motion. They're never in terms of just no motion. All right, therefore, your process on this can address as its lowest level the tiniest change and disobedience of force laws. We have a dynamo. We have a dynamo. And the dynamo is running very beautifully, and there's two terminals, and we have wires to the terminals, and the two ends of the terminals spark, and you have dogs running out of the two lines. Obviously something that wild, your preclear finds it easier to do than simply this. Have this dynamo grinding like mad and going to an electric light bulb, going to an electric light bulb and pumping the juice in, and he can watch the juice go through and all of that, and there isn't any light coming out of it. He might be able to do that by merely saying, "Electric light bulb's broken." So you make sure it's a new bulb and it's the proper voltage and everything else, and you just make him keep this up. Pump all the proper juice in the proper direction, the proper current to the proper light bulb, and have him turn it on and make sure that it's on with no light coming out of it. It gives him a sinking sensation after he does this for a short time, because he feels like the whole world's going to cave in. It won't. And so what if it does? No chance of all of this mess suddenly giving up its havingness that quick. But Preclear's idea of himself is really basically amusingly powerful. He really feels like he's a big, powerful brute of the universe, and he's kind of got it all masked up, and it's just thin shell that he's got there, that he's being nice and polite. He knows he's got all that power there, and after a while he begins to wonder, why don't I release it? First it was, I better not, and then, why don't I? And then pretty soon, I can't. But he very easily, when you start running into this, starts getting into this power plant of his own, the tremendous power, which is he. It begins to sort of pulse through his beingness. And the next thing you know, he says, if I let this go, or if I changed my mind, or if I thought a thought. So we get to the next stage on this thing. We start changing pasts and futures. We have things that he knows were built one way at a certain time, built another way at a different time, until he can see their construction and so forth and fix them all up. And things which you know very well don't exist now, existing in the future, and things which exist now, not existing in the future, with no physical explanation. No, none allowed. It didn't burn down. It didn't burn down. Paris, it doesn't exist tomorrow at 2 o'clock. All right, see the plane, Paris, not existing, 2 o'clock tomorrow. Well, he'll find that's not too hard to do, but he's got a hat. You see, this is intimate now. Got a hat on a hat rack. And you say, all of a sudden, to him, all right, now, have that hat, convert itself at 2 o'clock tomorrow to a lady's bonnet. And you kind of run through all the various ways. You take it down to the milliners, and you just do this and do that, and you'd have to change it by the laws of the physical universe. And that's not allowable. Just have him think forward to 2 o'clock tomorrow and change it in tomorrow. He knows he can't change anything in tomorrow anyhow. So he'll start fishing stuff around, and finally he'll say, well, I'll sort of kid him. I'll just kid the auditor. I'll kind of pretend I can do this, and so on. Yeah, he kidded the auditor, all right. He did just exactly what the auditor wanted him to do. He started to pretend he didn't have to agree. And the next stage to that is not agreeing. All right, because that's how he got into this mess in the first place. All right, now we've taken the physical universe one way or the other. We find it's pretty easy to run all of these things with the eyes closed. But it's not really a good thing to make a fellow start right out mocking up space, mocking up big things this way and that, changing them, knocking them out, and so forth, unless you're pretty sure what he's doing. Now, your E-meter will tell you more than anything else what he's doing. Your E-meter get a good reaction on this. You find out what he can or can't mock up. You say, all right, now let's mock up Mother. Okay, you got Mother mocked up. E-meter sag. Yes, he said, that was very easy. Now let's destroy her. E-meter, kaboom, bang. See, crashes against the pin. Got her destroyed? Yep. Well, I did that very easily. Nothing to that. Da-da-da-da. You say, what did happen? Well, tell you the truth, I didn't see a facsimile of it. I mean, she never really did anything to me, and I wouldn't ever do anything to her, and it's just something I couldn't conceive of. The E-meter now has dropped another dial. You say, all right, now let's take Mother's wedding ring. You got that. Now let's take it down to a hawk shop and hawk it. Well, I can get... I've never been in a hawk shop. I wouldn't know what a hawk shop looked like. Well, all right. Now, let's find some mud. Now, let's get you a place where your mother has walked through the mud. You got that? And she left a footprint, didn't she? All right. Now, we got this footprint, haven't we? All right. Now, have this mud suddenly turn out to be nothing but solid diamond dust and eradicate the footprint. Yeah, you say. Yeah, all right. Now, have the diamond dust suddenly turn into mud and have the footprint be back there again. Yeah. All right, now take the footprint and make the footprint walk off. You'll say, what? Well, just make it walk off, that's all. Well, I'd have to take some mud with it. No, don't take any mud with it. Just make the footprint walk off. Well, he'll kind of say annoyedly, all right, he'll do that. Now, go get your mother's shoe and bring it back and make another footprint. You've got him handling one of her shoes. Now you've got him hand two shoes. Now have him handle maybe something he's antagonistic about, Mother, such as her hairbrush. And then odds and ends this way and that, and you finally get it up to where he has a beautiful picture of his mother. Now have her growing young. He's perfectly willing to do this. She's old and gray and in terrible condition. Now have her growing young. He'll say, what? Have her growing young, getting younger and younger and younger and younger as the years progress. He knows the cycle is not supposed to go in this direction, and he will strain and he'll fuss at this. You say, well, have her get old. Well, that's easy. Have her get older. Well, that's easier. Have her get much older than that. Oh, that's... Well, she's dead. You've killed Mother, you see. Neat, huh? Now you say you can make her get younger and younger. Disobedience of the laws just requires anything to go backwards from the way it would have gone in this universe, or go upside down, or go contrary to some physical universe law. Now, you don't have to worry about this too much. A little bit of this produces enormous results. If you had to know the full categories of things and so on, and it had to be all gone through by rote, you'd find yourself processing somebody for a long time, and it works fast. Now, what then is your main object in this? It's to work with this universe until you can change all that so that you show he has a freedom to postulate and start creating mock-ups in his own universe. And you start him in then on imaginary spaces and so on, when you are perfectly confident that he can disobey any law in this universe or anything to anybody in this universe on any dynamic. And when you're confident he can do that, then you will be shifting over then to his particular creative universe. And what do you know? The creation of a universe has an awful lot to do with the creation of energy. And if you want him to perceive well, you had certainly better get him to handling energy well. And then you can get him up to that beautiful state of affairs where he can perceive perfectly with no energy. You see, that's actually the case. There isn't any reason to have to postulate some energy so he can look at it, or some energy to be there so he can look at it. That's nonsense, by the way. It's just one of those chains of agreements. We have, then, as our goal in this, loosening up a communication or an intention line of such a fixed character that nobody can see, feel, hear, or anything except messed universe. Now, there's some different ways to go about this. This does not change standard operating procedure, issue one, except in this wise. It changes it on step five, which says dead X running, and it shifts it over to creative processing. And it shifts six, and it shifts seven. And the way it shifts six is on your ARC and that sort of thing, rather favor creative processing of finding a room in which to locate and relocate things in disagreement with the physical universe, but not very much. And then on step seven, just do some more of the same. Therefore, your step five case is handled by creative processing in the direction of disagreeing with the physical universe simply by having something else happen. And you have something else happen until the person can do this very well. Even if his perceptions are practically off, you can still show the fellow a shilling and have him make, the second he sees the shilling with his eyes shut, make it turn around. Just that. Just change. Just make it turn around so he sees it the other way too. Show him the shilling, make it turn around. Now show him the shilling, make him hold it still for an instant. And you'll find his persistence of vision will continue on and get longer and longer and longer. If he has blackness, make him see blackness. All right. Now I'll give you an additional process which doesn't change any of those steps, but which is rather better than four. And this would probably fit in about four. You have the person look from inside his head at the room. You have him shut his eyes and take a look at the room. And he'll look, and he'll look, and he'll think, and look, and you say, well, what's happening? And he'll say, well, I do get a hazy impression of something or other. And you say, well, now, what's there that you wouldn't care to see? And that could be the name of this process, is what's there that you don't want there? Now, you may make him see a large section of the room. You may make him see a small section of the room. He may see a great deal of it, or practically none of it, right inside his head. What's there that you don't want there? And the fellow finally makes up his mind to the fact, oh, it must be mud or something. I must be buried in mud because all I can see is blackness. I don't see the room, I see blackness. You must be buried in mud. Okay, have some mud there. Now have some more mud there. I have some more mud there. Now take a little chunk of this mud off one corner of all this mud you've got and put it somewhere else. Got that. Now let's take another little piece of the corner and put it somewhere else. And have them slice the mud away. All right, yeah, this advances his perception a tiny little bit, not much. And he looks again and he says, you know, he said, I can see a curtain. Now, don't pay any attention to that curtain. He can on the curtain. You're interested in what he can't. You say, well, what's in the rest of the room that you don't care to have there? And he may tell you something very silly like a firing squad. And you say, all right, let's have a firing squad in the rest of the room. Come on, put a firing squad there. He says, well, I do get an impression of rifle barrels. You all put twice as many rifle barrels. Put another rifle barrel. Now just keep putting things there and putting things there and putting things there. And he puts more things there. He puts, well, finally says, to hell with it. I think I can see the other curtain. And in this fashion, you find out where he can't see or what is not clear to him. And find out what else it might be there. And he says it might be Papa. He said, well, I can see everything kind of bad, but one corner of the room seems to be dim. What's there? He says, a snake. Okay, you say, let's put a snake there. All right, now let's have him take a paintbrush in his tail, and let's have him paint the wall behind him a bright green. You got him doing that. Now have the snake be up against the ceiling. Okay. Now have him be all over the ceiling. Okay, that's fine. Now let's have him crawl out the front window. That's fine. What happened to him? Well, they must have taken him down to the zoo. Okay, that's all set. Now can you see that corner? Now he may say no. You say, well, what else should be in that corner? Well, I think my first girlfriend. Yeah, well, put her in there. I can't. Well, put a woman's locket there. Yeah, I can do that. All right, put a bracelet there. Put some earrings there. Put some hairpins there. Put some powder there, some paint there. this, that, all various female appurtenances, put them in the corner, and then finally you say, now put a girl there. You got a girl there? All right. Now put your old girl there. Okay, well, I've had her there for some time. She's been sitting there doing all this. And you'll find out that people aren't looking at areas because they consider that somebody is defending them or the areas are protected. And in any event, that energy is an energy interchange with that area is denied. So if you want to know what is his attitude toward that particular area, you just look up the sub-zero tone scale. And that's from -8 on up, and you'll have that. Is somebody protecting it? Or is, if you can't, if he won't give you any clue at all, somebody protecting it? Is something hiding there? Do you have to own something there before you can do this? Does somebody else own something there? So on. And he'll all of a sudden say, well, yes, there's the one headlamp of an Austin sitting there. Well, okay. Where's the other headlamp? Well, I can put that there, too. What Austin is it? Well, it's, I don't know. How should I know? It's just an Austin, all right? Put a Rolls Royce there. Okay, he's got a Rolls Royce there. Don't try to make him come back and agree with the universe. You will find yourself skidding every once in a while into asking him, what is really there? And so on. And in this technique, it is apparently heading in that direction. It really isn't heading in that direction. You want to know what he wants to put there, and you don't care what he puts there, and you don't try to point this out and show how this agrees with the libido theory as outlined in paper 265 as written by somebody in an insane asylum and being treated by somebody that read a book on the subject of charcoalism or something. You're not even vaguely interested in making a cross connection so that we can kind of get him over sideways and make him agree with the universe again. You get the idea, the insidiousness of face reality, face reality. Face reality, hell, invent your own reality. Much more interesting. A lot more randomity. Now, where we have this process falling down at any time, it's because the auditor has turned it in reverse and is trying to make the preclear agree in some fashion or another with the universe. The process should be done at optimum with the preclear outside the body, but the process can be utilized to get him outside the body. Now, how do you make a mock-up to disobey the law of conservation of energy? Well, you can think of dozens of ways to do that. Dozens. You have this a lump of coal, and have this lump of coal burning so as to manufacture coal, and have that fill up a bin, a town, a city, with just one lump of coal burning and making all this other coal. This, by the way, kind of outrages people when they start this sort of thing. They feel this as a little sense of outrage. That's actually a postulate clipping through, postulate agreement. It's very hard to fool very long on this line without having something happen. Now, how do you mock up responsibility? Responsibility, as we know, is willingness to handle force or the objects which are from force. So you just have people being responsible for people. And remember this, that these mock-ups can be run as overt acts and motivators. And you may find yourself running with actual people sometimes so long as your preclear starts to dope off. When you do reverse the personnel, you've had him banging mother over the head with a hammer for a half an hour. And just because you liked it too. And so you have mama turn around and bang your preclear over the head with a hammer, and the drowsiness will go away. Now, you have here three manifestations of energy, three wavelengths. I mean, you have your triangle. The three manifestations over here are flows, dispersals, which are essentially explosions or implosions, and ridges. Now, obviously, a fellow has to be able to handle something that looks like a ridge, or something that looks like a flow, or something that looks like a dispersal, in order to handle his own facsimiles. And you find preclears with tremendously strong flows. And you better handle something that looks like a flow. anything that looks like a flow will suddenly stop the flow. The preclear is having a bad time with flows. He feels this current. He's kind of scared all the time or something like that. Fright? You get what fright is right there on the tone scale. It's a dispersal of some sort. So on. You have him blow up a balloon. That's handling an explosion. Have him blow it up and blow it up and blow it up and blow it up till it bursts. Okay, let's get a bigger balloon. Now blow it up, and all of a sudden he said, well, the dickens with the balloon, I feel all right. He's not scared all of a sudden. What have you done? You've handled the pattern of the energy manifestation. An important little technique. Now, if he can't handle these flows, let's say that he's got a heavy incoming flow that is actually, he can feel sometimes, it's like pressure flowing down against him. Make him walk up rivers. Make him walk up pouring stuff out of taps, out of wash pans, anything you can think of that has anything to do with the flow. Have him pour some beer into a glass. All of a sudden, the flow will stop. And when I say all of a sudden, that's factually true. You can't run creative processing more than a few minutes without remedying something. If you are running it too long on one subject, you are not matching what's happening close enough. You're running it too wide. Now, let's say you're making him hold something still. You think he's in a ridge, and actually he's being knocked to pieces by a flow. He could tell you his stomach is fluttering. He could practically feel his stomach waving in the breeze of some flow. He's sitting there. Make him describe his symptoms, and then find out, does it feel like it's something solid, a sheet of something, or does it feel like an explosion, or feel like something's going to collapse inside on itself? They come right out and tell you. My head feels like it's just going to collapse on itself. It just feels like it's just going to collapse on itself. That's all. It's just going to come right down on itself. And so what? You say, well, take a newspaper. You got a newspaper? Well, yeah, well, I can get dim idea of a newspaper. Now, take this newspaper and crush it all up together. Now, crush it a little bit thinner. More. Crush it all up until it's a spitball. Now, blow it at your teacher. You say, all right. Now, I take another piece of paper, bigger piece of paper. Now, crush that all up. What you're doing is mocking up an implosion. See? Well, he doesn't know it. You see, my head doesn't feel like that now. He says, that's good. Or he said, he's obviously dispersing like mad, and every time you ask him a question, he jumps up and he lights a cigarette and he wants to walk around and rush off somewhere or do something. He's in a dispersal. Well, what's a dispersal? Have him light a sparkler. You know, one of these sparklets or something of the sort, and have him whirl that around. And get him to get things that are dispersing. Now, have him take any kind of, like a light bulb, and watch the light rays go out from it. Now, have him walk up a sun and watch the rays go out from the sun. Sort of thing. First thing you know, he's all right. It's very strange how fast you will see some of this stuff working. Now, he says, I just don't know. Life, I just don't seem to get any place in life. You know, ridge. But we won't go any further. We just let him go on talking. He said, I don't seem to get any place in life. Every time I do anything, I'm right up against a brick wall. That's his idea of a ridge. Every time he tries to move forward, he, of course, runs into a ridge. So it feels like a brick wall. If you could reach over and feel it, you probably would feel like a brick wall. Maybe it is some brick wall sometime or another, but it's a lot of brick walls. It's an actual deposit of energy. Well, let's see what we do about that. Let's take ranges of mountains and turn them upside down. We can't do that. Well, all right, let's take 1 cube of sugar. Now let's turn it over. In other words, make him handle solids, move solids around. Have him build, then, a brick wall by putting the top brick in first. And while it remains in the air, hook a brick under it and build the wall down to the ground. People have more trouble with that one. They try to hold that top brick up and get the second brick in there. If you won't let them do it with anything else, you see, they'll try to kind of put out a theta beam to hold it up with. Very interesting. All right. What do? You approximate what's wrong with a markup which in itself disagrees with what's wrong. A markup which disagrees with the physical universe, certainly, the laws of energy or objects. Now, we'll have this automobile, go running down the road. The fellow says, you say, you got that? All right, now have it run down the road sideways. In just a minute, I'll have to reverse all the wheels. No, you say, have the wheels just where they are, and have it going down the road. All right, you got it going down the road? Now, have it stop at every green light. You say, what? You say, have it stop at every green light. It just got wrecked. Well, take it back again and stop at that green light. Okay. Now, have the light go red. I got her now, he says. Yeah, now make go through the red light. It won't go. Well, have the driver light a match, burn it out, and throw the match across the intersection. Yeah, I can do that. All right, now drive through the red light. Well, all right, I did it. You say, which way did you go through the red light? Well, it was right through it. You say, in other words, the car is now going forwards. No. Go back there again and put that car sideways and move it through the green light, move it through the red light sideways. Got that? Work with it until he can do it. Have one wheel go through sideways. I'll have two wheels go through sideways. Anything. Just upset enough laws to make it look like he you see, one of the primary postulates is that an individual can't handle confusion. You're showing him he can handle confusion. By the way, you can get a guy juggling around like this and his arithmetical ability just goes zing. It just goes out of sight. He all of a sudden starts adding up columns left and right, perfectly correct answers and so on. Why? Because he's not afraid to be wrong. And if he's not afraid to be wrong, that means he's not afraid he's in disagreement. Wrongness is disagreement with the physical universe. Wrongness to the physical universe is disagreement, bad estimation of force. And so if he's not afraid of bad estimation of force, he, of course, has got all of his... All of himself can be right. Unfortunate connotation occurs when all this takes place, and that is he ceases to be human. Now, look at the primary definition of theta. In creative processing, look at the primary definition of theta. You have something which has no wavelength, space, is yet capable of time, space, energy, location in. You have this capability. It can locate time and space, so on. Change objects and energy. Now, actually, you could take any facsimile or any lock, and simply by making the precursor, if you worked with it long enough, you could move it slightly enough. Move it over to the right, move it over to the left an inch, move it up an inch, down an inch, back an inch, forward an inch, forward, round, back, forth. And all of a sudden, having moved it well over to the right, having moved it, this is maybe his father's death or something. You move it over to the right, you eventually get him so he'll move it clear over to the left. Now he'll put it in way above him, now he'll put it way under him. Now look at it upside down. Oh, I can't do that. All right, look at it on edge. Yeah. Now have it flat again, but have it below your feet. Yeah. All right. Now have it stand on the other edge. Yeah. Now look at it upside down. Okay. You say, all right, now put it in tomorrow. Put it 2 minutes from now. Yeah. Recover it. Yeah. Put it tomorrow. Yeah. See? Just shift it around in time. Now, put it in yesterday. Put it in 5 minutes ago. Yeah. Put it in yesterday. Yeah. Put it 10 years ago. Yeah. Was it 20 years ago? He was alive 20 years ago. All right, put it 20 years ago. Okay. Put it 50 years ago. Okay. Put it 100 years ago. Okay. Put it 200 years in the future. I won't be in this universe 200 years from now. I'm sure of that. No, I just had this hadn't occurred to me. I couldn't guarantee that it'd be there 200 years in the future. We'll put on some other track. Oh, well, all right. It's 10 years in the future. Okay, get it 200 years in the future. Oh, yeah, I got that. All right, I'll take it in front of you again. See, you know I'm getting off the board to this? Yeah, you say, well, all right. Turn it upside down. Yeah, now look at it edgewise. Well, it doesn't have any edgewise. Well, put an elephant on the back of it. Well, turn around and look at the front of it. Now turn around on the back of it. Now put an elephant on the back of it. Now look at the elephant. Now turn around and look at the front of it. Got that? Now turn around and look at the back of it again. Now turn around and look at the front of it again. Now turn around and look at... You know, the elephant's chewed this thing all up, he says. He said, now that's an automatic response. That isn't supposed to be. Now put that thing back together again, now, the way it's supposed to be. Now put that elephant on the back of it, and I have the elephant upside down, and the facsimile right side up. Now I have it turn around this way. You know? Gee. Now have the facsimile jump through the elephant's head, and have the elephant jump through your father's head. Well, I said, what am I doing all this for? I'm not even vaguely interested in this. As a matter of fact, he'll look younger. You've actually handled a piece of energy that he considered very, very desirable for some reason or other. You've just blown it up. This is a method of handling facsimiles, which works on people when they are up enough so that they can handle a little bit of energy itself. They'll actually handle the whole bank this way. And they finally say, well, I see it. It stretches out there about 80,000 miles in all directions. This is darn standard bank. It's got ridges all over it. I've been accumulating it for ages. That sort of thing. You say, well, why don't you wad it up and throw in a wastebasket? Well, I'll have to get a wastebasket. Okay, I got a wastebasket. I'll wad it up and I'll throw it in the wastebasket. Now, there it is. I'll put the lid on. Now, to hell with it. I never want to see it again. You say, okay, that's fine. Take it out of the wastebasket and stretch it out to 80,000 miles. Oh, no, he says. Get him up tone on it each time, you understand? Watch his voice tones. It's handling things in space and making them start, change, and stop. And that is done by creating them, letting them grow, conserving them, letting them decay, and knocking them out by decay or by sudden demise or just by saying they aren't there anymore. That's that final essence of what all these things worked out to. The guy, you keep telling a fellow, blow him up. If he's up at a level, he'll get annoyed after a while because he'll say, well, all I have to say is it's not there, it's not there anymore. All right, let it go up there. That's all. Now, when I say, here comes the slippy business, you can take anything that is aberrative to the individual and do that with it. Here comes a little slippery piece of business that isn't too terribly useful for you because you won't use it too much. But there is a geometric, that is, say, solid geometry manifestation for every item that has been used aberratively on the whole track. There are various solid geometry patterns. I probably shouldn't use that. I should merely say there are cylinders. There are square boxes, there are black boxes, there are white boxes, there are big lenses, there's various types of troughs, there's various types of barrels of things. In other words, there's all kinds of shapes that have been used aberratively. Now let's take a fellow who is afraid of an electric chair. Any chair to him is upsetting. So how do you get him over his being afraid of an electric chair? Well, you'd have to get him over on one side, over being afraid of motion and perception, which is the electric chair, is energy, plus getting him over being afraid of chairs. So the more you can make a chair depart from reality, and the more he can handle this, and the better he can handle this, the more confident he is, and he suddenly doesn't worry about it anymore. It's almost irrational how fast, in fact it is irrational, how very fast a person's aberrations blow up. He never considered his aberrations could blow up as fast as they'll blow up under this type of processing without any more action than that. He's considered them heavy, horribly heavy things that are just ready to crush him at any moment, and this and that, and you ask him to do this and do that and do this and that, and he's not worried about it. It's not dramatic. Negative gain. Well, take something like Fact 1. How would you handle Fact 1? Fact 1 is a camera-like affair, where you just give him a camera and have him taking pictures. He could monkey around with this for some time, and he'd still be upset by it. Give him a black box. Now, have him juggle this black box and put it in tomorrow and yesterday and have it congratulate people and congratulate it and have it run around in circles and change it into a green box and change it into a blue box and change it back into a black box again, and then put his socks in it, and then have him put his dirty socks in it, and then have him take his lunch out of it, and anything you think along this line. He's handling a black box, and he's handling a black box for a relatively short space of time. Fact one blows up. Isn't that interesting? But it's by handling a black box. Now, there are black boxes and black cylinders and white cylinders, and there's a whole list of items. There are shapes. So you just take anything of this shape, and I'm going to give you, and you will receive a list of these shapes of things. I'll give you a list of shapes. So you just take lists of shapes, and you just have him do things with these lists of shapes, preferably things that disagree with the material universe. And if you know what to audit very well, you will know what n-gram you're running. It isn't even necessary for you to know that. Let's take a cylinder. There's one called the tumbler. It isn't in what to audit. It's a nice police device. You can show this to almost anybody, and they get upset. The tumbler consists of a long black tube, and they dump the fellow in one end of it, and he tries to remember which end is up, and of course the actuality is he's falling. But he's tumbling as he falls. And because he's tumbling as he falls, he sees the end of the thing going in all directions, and he thinks he has to stop himself, so he halts himself in the center of the tumble, mentally, and then keeps on falling as a body. And he locks him right straight up in an n-gram. You see how that is? He tries to stop himself from falling as he falls, and because he's going over and over, his perception of the mouth of this thing, it's going all around this way and this way, it's a white circle, the barrel of it. And it just keeps going round and round. Why? He's falling. It looks like the tumbler is tumbling, you see? It's he that's tumbling. Doesn't look like it to him, though. Now, this is an interesting one. You want to know why people are hard to get to dinner? They sit there and look at a white plate. That's the end of that doggone tube. And very often we'll be confused. Now, if you don't really think it's there, and the next time, before you come to class next time, I want you to take this little experiment, interesting experiment. Have a fellow look around until he spots sort of theta-wise, you know, you don't have to tell him how to spot it, but does he get any dim impression of a white disc anywhere around him? He'll say, yeah, there's one down there. I sort of see one down there, yeah. Yeah, but every time I look at it, he says it swings up someplace else. You say, well, all right, take a look where it is. Well, I pick it up over here now, and it goes over this way. And so that's foolish. That's kind of peculiar. Now he says, it's out there. He said, what is it? All of a sudden, kapow. He's liable to get an electrical discharge. Because the little jokers that jumped him into the tube like that had an electronic stream going out of the end of the thing after the fellow started falling. In other words, they would dump the fellow into the end of this tube. He would tumble. But just after they dumped him in, they would turn the juice on, and a terrific wave action would set in. And any time if anybody really starts to pick up this disc, he'll get an electronic flash. Now, you want to pick somebody who's rather flat-faced to get a really good result on this particular one. And you just have him look around until he spots something. And you say, now, all right, throw your attention on it. Because the funny part of it is whenever he throws his attention out on it, he activates it and it discharges so as to bring his attention back on himself. So he can't get out into the environment. And that's the purpose of the tumbler. Everywhere he looks out here, he's liable to see this thing, so he stops extending himself into the environment. It's a limiter. So he looks at this, and he sees this spot. And you say, do you see that spot? Yes. Well, slap your attention back on again. He says, I'm trying to push it back there. It doesn't push. You say, well, no, we don't want you to push it back on there. Just slap it back on there. Just snap it. Just jump it over and have it be on it. And he said, well, every time I do that, it comes back at me like this. You say, well, now slap it over and hold it on it. He's liable to get a nice electronic pow right in the face. And he's going to be awfully suspicious of you. He's going to say, for heaven's sakes, because you haven't explained to him anything about the whole tag, and explained anything to him at all. You just told him to look out and find a spot and then slap his attention onto it a couple of times. And the next thing you know, he's kind of sure that maybe you put your hand in your pocket and did something, or you did something to him, because that much flash certainly just wouldn't have come from just nowhere. That's an interesting trick, and try it. It gives you a nice, of course, probably give the fellow a cold, but that's all right. He'll sooner or later trigger this thing anyway. He'll look out there long enough, and it'll flash. It's a limiter. It says, tells the fellow space is just that big. He doesn't dare look any further than that. Anytime he looks further than that, it directs his attention back to him. And he is holding the facsimile out there, so it will do this. Amusing, isn't it? Well, how do you solve something like the tumbler? You just have this fellow take a white plate. You got a white plate. All right. Now I have the white plate sit an inch above the table. Process on. Yeah, I got an inch above the table. You say, now have it slowly skim along the table and then swing up overhead and swing around the room a couple of times. He says, keeps turning into a seagull. Ha ha, seagulls are lashed up on tumblers. Only you don't mention this. You could go into this a little bit further. You say, you're upset about seagulls or something like that? Yeah, I used to watch them with fascination. I was a little bit afraid of them, as a matter of fact. They look strange to me. See, the dives of the seagulls reminded him of something white flashing around in erratic circles that he couldn't control. So I have him make this plate fly around the room. Of course, that's quite a trick. I mean, material universe, plate flying around in the middle of the room. Now, have the hammer fly up at the plate and hit the plate and have the hammer smash into fragments.